Hello, everyone. I'm Elena Armijo, and I'm the founder of the C-Suite Collective. This is a company I created for executive leadership coaching and wellness that supports C-suite executives, entrepreneurs, and founders. We support modern companies committed to fostering diversity, equity, inclusion, and belonging, holistic organizational growth, and generational impact for years to come. Now, more than ever, businesses are running faster and with fewer resources. Burnout, overwhelm, disconnection, and disillusionment are the new norm for teams struggling with an old paradigm. At the C-Suite Collective, we believe deeply that providing massive support for your teams through executive coaching and holistic practices will create an inclusive culture, higher levels of performance, sustainable change, and the organizational impact you desire. You can find us at the c-suitecollective.com. What can support leaders during tough times? We'll look at that in our coaching tip for the week. And today in our interview segment, we have Ned Hanlon, who currently performs as a member of the Metropolitan Opera Chorus, where he's sung as a chorister and soloist for over 1,300 performances since 2014. Recently elected president of AGMA, he previously served as chair of the Met Opera AGMA Negotiation Committee, president of the AGMA Opera and Concert and Choristers Caucus, and founded the Met Chorus Artists, Inc., a nonprofit that raised almost $750,000 for artists in need during the height of the pandemic. Ned and I sang together in Ashland Opera many moons ago, and I adore this guy. He is a leader of leaders, a gentleman, and really fights for artists and always has since the moment I met him. I hope you enjoy the episode today, and remember, something powerful resides within you. I'm here to support you in seeing it and creating it. What can support leaders during tough times? So one of the things I've been thinking about as we enter the election year and we are looking at tough conversations as we go through the election is what can actually support leaders during this time of conflict or when emotions will be high or when all of America is looking at what's next. So there's a couple things that I'm focusing on for my team and for my clients. The first is emotional intelligence and empathy. So we've talked a lot about this on this podcast for a couple years, and really, emotional intelligence and empathy have been quite high on the list of what people are attending to in organizations and my clients, really since the pandemic hit. So we were isolated and shut out from the way that we used to live before. So emotional intelligence and empathy came forward pretty quickly. So one of the things I want to remind everybody is don't forget that this is still important during tough times. The more that you can bring empathy in a conversation, you can connect with your team, connect with your people around their emotions. This makes people feel supported and also fosters a sense of trust with your team. So remember, this is still on the table during tough times. My favorite is clear communication. One of my favorite quotes is from Brené Brown, "Clear is kind." I actually don't think she said it because it's an unknown quote, but she uses it all the time in her work. And really what this means is highlight the importance of clear communication through transparency and through conversations where tough news may be hard to hear, but tough news is better to hear than news that is shrouded in secrecy or lack of clarity or niceness instead of being kind. And what I really mean by that is the more bold you can be about what you're saying, the more people can actually process the information. Open communication helps to reduce uncertainty and anxiety, and it really allows everyone to understand their roles and responsibilities clearly. The third tip is around resilience and adaptability. So, you know, I really feel like we've built a lot of resilience in the past 4 to 5 years as we went through the pandemic, emerged from the pandemic, and now are looking at what's next. And so this is a skill that we're going to continue to need, which is being resilient and adapting to whatever comes up. So sometimes that's going to be moment to moment or week to week or quarter to quarter. So encourage your leaders to foster resilience within themselves and their teams, emphasizing the importance of maintaining a positive mindset. This is going to really create the ability to bounce back from setbacks. And the last tip is support networks and self-care. So again, high stress means you got to level up your self-care. And it really is looking at what you're going to need to reground yourself in conversations that are going to be activated over and over and over again. Does that mean a 5-minute break? Does that mean breath work? Does that mean taking an afternoon off? Does that mean shutting off your news alerts? It can be anything in the realm of bringing more mindfulness to your present space and setting boundaries and grounding yourself again. So these are the things I'm going to think about during the tough times coming up, or vital communication or conversations that might happen with our next year. Ned, I am I'm so excited to have you today on the podcast. I love your leadership style. I did way back when we were singing together. Even then, it was apparent what kind of a leader you were. And I always like to share with people one of the first memories I have of people when I was with them. And I was thinking about that today, and it is linked with your wife, Tanya, because when I met you, you were already married. Mm-hmm. Both of you were such a dynamic duo team. And I remember watching the two of you work when we were, I think we were at DiCapo. Is that right?
No, Ashlawn. Right?
Oh, Ashlawn. Okay. Yes. See? All the memories are coming together 15 years later. And I remember watching the two of you and thinking how cool it was that you could have a partnership like that, where both of you were living out your own dreams. You were out on your own path, but you were still so committed to each other, and the freedom that came with that. That's the one thing I remember the most. So thank you for your generosity in being here and being on the show.
No, my pleasure. And yeah, that aspect of our relationship is definitely still the case, because, like, you know, she's half a world away right now on a cruise ship, but it's nice to be able to have that with a partner. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. Y'all make it work. Well, I want to jump right into leadership. That's what this is all about. And I'd love to just hear a little bit about your journey. If you want to share a little bit about journeying from singer to the leader that you are now.
Yeah. So I've been a singer basically my entire adult life, and worked as a kind of freelance singer around, you know, touring around the country, doing things like that. 10 years ago, I got a job as a member of the full-time chorus of the Metropolitan Opera. And while I was there, we were doing contract negotiations with the Metropolitan Opera, the union that represents opera singers, ballet dancers, singers, dancers, ballet, stage managers, stage directors, choreographers, actors in opera, ballet, and concert work is the American Guild of Musical Artists. And our contract was up, mm-hmm. and we had to negotiate a new contract with the Met. And unfortunately, the chair of our negotiating committee resigned kind of last minute. And
mid-negotiation?
Yeah. I mean, you know, like last minute relatively, like, you know, okay. 8 months out when there's still a lot of work to be done. There was no one obvious to jump in and do it. I was like, well, why not? You know, it's an important thing to do. I'm the son of two lawyers. So that side of things is always something that's been on my mind. I've always enjoyed that. It, you know, I was destined to be a lawyer, and then by mistake ended up as an opera singer. And so I was like, yeah, I can do this. And it was an incredibly intense process. But I started doing it, and, you know, and that involved chairing a committee of 30 or so folks made up of many different work groups and working our way through this very contentious negotiation. I did that that was 2018. I did that again during the pandemic in 2021. I was also the chair of the negotiating committee, and we, while dealing with all the effects of the pandemic, which obviously hit artists around the country very hard, we were also negotiating the contract. So I negotiated a second contract with the Met then. And then the opportunity came up last year that there was an opening for president of the union. The current president was not going to run again. I was excited to try something new. And also, I think the pandemic was eye-opening for a lot of reasons, for a lot of folks. And for me, it kind of widened my my viewpoint up on the arts industry and what needed to happen within the arts industry. And I thought that if I became president of this national union, I could start to work on those things in a more meaningful way than just at the Metropolitan Opera. So that was kind of what led me to that point. I've now been president since this past June, and it's been really exciting. It's been a big learning process, but some really great things have been happening. And you know, I'm really, I think we as a group are really moving in the right direction, and I'm very excited to be part of that.
That's amazing. Congratulations, first of all. I'm super, super proud of you. And it's nothing about me, but just even knowing you from where we started and to see you fight for such beautiful causes and reasons for artists in general is amazing. So thank you for the work you're doing. And I'm curious, what did it take to make that leap? You specifically said like you saw some things you wanted changed in the industry, and you thought if you were able to become the president that you can make some changes. So can you talk about some of those changes you wanted to see?
Well, I think in general, people came out, you know, and I think the pandemic is the root of a lot of these things. A lot of them, not all obviously, but it really was a clarifying moment for artists in general, where we realized that in some ways we needed to take care of ourselves. You know, in over the course of March, the American Guild of Musical Artists, which represents almost 7,000 people, went from being, you know, most of those folks being employed to literally none of them being employed and none of them being paid. Yep. And it became very clear that that artists who are workers needed to make sure that we were taking care of each other, because companies weren't necessarily going to do that or couldn't necessarily do that. And so it just became like, you know, so how do we do that? How would we go about doing this? And, you know, there's a lot of different ways, but I think the strength, is recognizing that we are one of the important things. I think we, you know, I think I maybe just mentioned, but that we are, that artists are workers. And if we are, and we deserve like fair compensation for the things we do, we deserve like, you know, stability and those kind of things. And so how do we do that? That has been figuring out how to do that has been something I'm really focusing on. And I think there's a lot of different ways. One, I don't know if you want to go into like, if you'd like me to, you know, we can talk more about
whatever you want.
I don't know. Yeah. Yeah. And so like, I would say the things that I have tried to work on the most since becoming president are really looking outward, becoming, you know, bringing this union, which has at times been kind of an insular union, taking care of its own, the folks that are employed, and looking outward, building alliances with other unions, with other workers, with other arts workers and non-arts workers, really. You know, I think we all saw what happened with SAG-AFTRA and the Writers Guild this summer, and that kind of power. And with that, with building that kind of, you know, building those kind of alliances, then learning how and putting into practice, like working, doing collective actions that doesn't necessarily have to be strikes, but that has to be, that can be strikes, but that can be just like, I think a really great example of like building this kind of solidarity that I've been trying to focus on is there's an opera, you know, there's a ballet company, American Ballet Theater, one of the great ballet companies in the country. And they're dealing currently, actually, in a very difficult negotiation. But in the in December, they had a gala, and every one of their dancers showed up wearing AGMA t-shirts, just to make it very clear that they were together, they were unified, and you know they were in solidarity. And so I, you know, like building that kind of sense, that kind of focus to do these things has been, you know, the way I've been describing is turning our union into a union that marches. And that's particularly hard for artists because artists are very vulnerable. Companies can frequently say like, oh, I'm not going to hire you back because I for artistic reasons, artistic discretion is something that companies can use at times. But what's valuable is if we work together, they can't not have everyone back, you know? And so we all add, magnify, amplify each other's efforts when we work together. So like doing that, empowering artists to speak up and then protecting them from any retaliation that comes from it have been major focuses.
That's amazing. And here's why, because what I'm thinking of is when I was an artist and a singer, when I was doing it full time, a lot of the things I worried about were retaliation, just like you said, but also the idea that like everybody seemed to perpetuate the context that it is the way it is. And there was always this like shared agreement between all singers that everybody just didn't cause waves. And so therefore, you know, some people could survive in the system. But if you didn't like the system, it is what it is. And so I really, really love and just respect where you all are headed with this collective idea. And you said it earlier when we were talking offline beforehand around collective power. And I really hear that in your vision, that if everybody stands together and everybody supports each other, all people get to eat together, that then it becomes something that people actually want and can support in many ways. That's brilliant. And I also love the idea of strategic partnerships. That's what I'm hearing with other organizations that can potentially support or add power to the collective power,
right,
which is new for the industry. Yeah,
I think so. I mean, as a indication of what this kind of focus has done is so in December, I was invited to a meeting at the White House to talk about arts funding. And it was a smallish meeting. It was like 25 or so people there, just stakeholders in the arts industry. What was very exciting about the meeting is it had folks from many different areas and agencies of the government, like the Surgeon General was there, to talk and to see the interactions between the arts and health. The head of the Department of Transportation was there to see the interactions, you know, and how all these different things can work together. And I was there basically as the representative of arts workers. And I was representing this this coalition of art, the AEMI union coalition, which is arts, entertainment, and media unions. And so basically my point there was to like kind of stand up and say every time somebody came up with a great idea, it was like, oh, this is an amazing idea, but how is it going to help workers? And how is it going to help artists? And it was really effective, but it was a sign that, you know, if we push to be part of these conversations, we can be an important voice in shaping important things like federal arts funding. So that was very exciting. It was great, and it was really good to be in that room speaking for artists and workers.
How beautiful. And I know that you've just started this appointment in June, but what have you already seen shifting from you shared a little bit about that earlier, but I'm curious, are there direct tangible results that are happening in the art form itself because of the shifts you're making? Have you seen that, you know, back in the ballet on stage or on stage at the Met, like what are you seeing as the circular approach to the collective power?
I certainly don't want to make it sound like I am purely the one responsible for building all this.
Oh, of course not, but you're part of it.
Absolutely. And
yeah,
but I think it is actually worth taking a step back, and then I'll get back to that, but it is worth saying,
yeah,
you know, the way I think effective leaders really in a lot of places, but I've been mainly a leader in union circles, is not as leading ahead, like being the person who charges ahead and does things, but being a facilitator and a harnesser of the collective power of everyone else. And I really think that it's like me as leader wants to be consensus builder. Because I think that if everyone is together, that's what allows this united front to form. And that's where the real power and strength in unions comes from. So I think I have like helped shape this power and like move this power in good, you know, in the right directions. Everything that I would say, like, you know, I've been a part of, like other, a lot of other people, really important folks, you know, are often even the more important people in that. And I've just been very happy to be there helping to facilitate them getting their voice out there, being heard, and making differences. So, I mean, but what I say in general, like, I think what we've been seeing, and this started before June, is we've seen an incredible, like, just unlike anything we've ever seen in our union since maybe the 50s, like, increase in desire to join unions. I think seven new companies around the country in the past year have voted to join AGMA. I should actually be very specific. Artists at seven different companies, not the companies themselves.
Okay.
They had to be dragged, kicking, and screaming. Okay. we had successful elections in seven different companies. I think we've already had two successful elections already this year in 2024, and we've just announced a couple new places that are going to go to elections to join the union, and we feel pretty confident about that. So, but it's been really exciting to see artists kind of seizing this moment that labor is having everywhere and becoming part of it and realizing that they can. And so, like, I've been just trying to do whatever I can to help facilitate that, to support those folks, to get, you know, to amplify their messages and make sure that they have the resources, you know, the artists around the country have the resources they need if and when they want to organize. So that's been a big one. Something that actually, I wouldn't say this is the last 6 months at all, or 8 months since I started, but something that's been a real major focus, and I'm bringing it up partly because I know this is something you're focused on, and it's really good, is we've really, at AGMA, maybe in the past 4 years, I would say 3 years, again, probably since the pandemic, made a real, real push to making sure that we have strong IDEA values in our, just for the sake of the idea, inclusion, diversity, equity, and accessibility values in our union, that we do our stuff at our union the right way, but we also make sure we, you know, we lead by example for, you know, as best we can within our union, but then really prioritize those things at when we bargain new collective bargaining agreements with every company. And we've had an incredible amount of success in that, in terms of, like, basically every company in the country that we bargain with now has substantially more IDEA language than they did before. And, like, the way we think about it is, like, unions, you know, we think of unions, like, what do they do? They improve wages, they give you security, they make you safe on the job. Well, like, the way we think about it is IDEA stuff. And I would also, like, this is a different thing, but you know, sexual harassment, you know, and discrimination things, those are safety issues. And so we've really changed our focus and made sure that, or not changed our focus, because of course they always were, but we've made it a real focus to try to address those things at companies and within the industry. So I guess those are a couple. I'm trying to think anything else off the top of my head. You know, again, I do think a lot of the positive value I've been able to bring has been in this, like, coalition building and getting more involved outside of the union. You know, I've been, you know, with some regularity, been going down to DC for meetings with the AFL-CIO, which is basically the union of unions. And so, like, you know, so, but those have been kind of my focuses, and I think what the accomplishments of the past, you know, since June would be.
Wow. Congratulations. I'm really inspired by the way you're leading. And it's so good to hear that there's people in the arts that are leaning into all of this. And my next question stems from, you know, I'm in my limited knowledge of unions, I'll say that, so you can school me if you need to, about, you know, there's this perception, I think, in the world growing up that I had, you know, especially from a small town in New Mexico, that unions were not necessarily good, but they were out for the fight. And when I think of unions and capitalism in America, you know, that there's this constant friction that is my limited understanding again. But what's really fascinating to me about that conversation is that it strikes me that you all are really good at conflict, and that your entire job has been to be in conflict and make it a thing that is actually not to be afraid of, and to move forward a conversation and actions to get to somewhere. And so I'm curious, you know, we're in an election year and our country is pretty divided right now, and we have a lot of people that are in binary conversations. So I'm wondering, what's the gold that you have to share from years and years and years of unions existing and you, you know, recently learning about them? You know, what goal do you have to share for everyone around what's coming and how to actually be in a conversation that is tough and has conflict and people don't necessarily want to be in? What's the advice that you have for those people?
Well, the first thing that came to mind when you said that is I remember my first negotiation in 2018. I was just kind of talking in passing to our outside counsel and talking about, you know, how we were negotiating. I forget exactly what the sentence was, but it was like something to the effect of, we were negotiating against blah blah blah, and she stopped me, and she was like, no, we're not negotiating against anyone. We are negotiating with someone. And I thought that was a really important like distinction to make there, because yes, these negotiations can get very intense, and I have gotten very yelly at times on calls with my general director. But at the same time, they are useless. None of this is going to work unless you understand where the people across the table are coming from, what they want, and like how you can work together, how you can negotiate together to get to a place that works. Now, sometimes, like, that's generally how it works. That's generally how, you know, it is. I will say, like, sometimes, and it's only happened once in my entire time, you know, in my, all my unit activity. So, like, sometimes you are actually negotiating with someone who's a monster and is, and then like, yeah, sometimes you need to do a scorched earth campaign. But that's that's never what you want to do, because like that's bad for everyone in a lot of ways. And so I think finding commonalities, finding things, I always when I was in negotiations focused on trying to find things that were more important to me and less important to the other person. And then likewise were more important to that person and less important to me. And those, that's how you find commonalities. That's one of the ways you really find something. I'm a big believer in asking for what you want, not like 15 times what you want and then eventually like get pushed back to what you want. And I just think you come at a place from like a respect for who they are, respect for what they want, and then you just, you know, you let them know what you need, and you know, you don't back down from that. And that's maybe when the fighting starts. You need to prove that if you don't get what you want, you can exert power. You can exert that collective action. You can withhold your labor, which is the greatest power that working people have. That's, you know, in a strike. But you don't want to do that. And sometimes I've definitely found like that once everyone truly understands, truly believes that the other people are serious, that they're not bluffing, that they're not, you know, doing any of that, that like the union would strike, the company would lock us out, then you can really talk, and then you can have honest conversation, and like then you get to someplace. So yeah, sometimes the stakes are high, but ideally almost raising, I don't know. So yeah, so does that make sense? I'm not sure if
it makes great sense. And I think my favorite thing about what you said was, and this is a very important piece, not only the negative with, you use the word with a lot, right? Which is important. And then definitely in negotiations, man, I think about all my clients who like try to negotiate a salary raise or a new job position or benefits for whatever's next. And It always surprises me. Well, it doesn't surprise me. I should say it's always sad to hear that the advice is, well, start really, really high because eventually you'll get low to where you want to be. And so everything we do is work around like, no, what do you actually want? What is negotiable and what's non-negotiable? What's nice to have and what's not like absolutely a no-go for you? And then bring it honestly to the table. And so I really just love the mirror approach that you have, that you were sharing about. And then the other thing that really struck me as like, whoa, I need to bring that more to my coaches and my company is the piece around everybody loses when you play the scorch game. And man, I mean, talk about passionate leaders that I work with and myself being, you know, a creative artist that's passionate about some of this stuff. It's very easy in your anger to want to go to a black and white approach of thinking. And I just really love the reminder that that actually hurts more people than it helps, even when you think you're helping.
Yeah. I mean, the way I think about it, and actually I'm stealing this from one of our former lawyers, who's now our national executive director of our union, is that like my first priority is the artists. My second priority is the artist's company. Because without that company, like those artists aren't employed. So like, you know, we're going to work, you know, like we're going to get the artists, we're going to work on getting these artists what they need and what they deserve and what they should get fairly. But it serves no one to destroy a company or to, you know, to bankrupt a company, because that's, you know, that's an outcome that's the worst case outcome to any negotiation.
Yeah. Beautifully said. Well, I always like to ask my guests this last question, which is, what's your hope for the future and the world, and really the world of arts, right? Since that's your corner of the world. But what's your hope in the next, you know, 2 or 3 years? What do you hope to see through the work that you're doing?
I guess there's like the kind of the broad industry answer. Well, they're both broad industry answers, so I won't even make the distinction. But I mean, for one, is like we're in a hard time in the arts right now. Theaters are closing in a lot of places. The arts have not fully come back from the pandemic. People are still not seeing things. And we need that to change, and kind of we need help getting through that. So I don't, you know, like this is one of the gospels I've been preaching in DC. Dude, we need help getting through this bad period. Because people are coming to shows, I think. But people are coming to shows just like we're still struggling. We're still dealing with the repercussions of them. So I'm hopeful, like we just are going to need to do everything we can over the next few years to make sure the companies are supported, but make sure the artists don't bear all that support on their backs, because, artists have dealt with a lot. And it's hard being an artist, period. And then, but then to take on, you know, the responsibility of saving the Met by taking cuts, like that's more than they should have to do, because it's not an easy lifestyle anyway. But I would say the biggest thing, what I really, in 3 years, and this is obviously Pollyanna-ish, pie in the sky. Like this will not.
Yeah, that's what we want. The hopes and dreams. We want those. Yeah,
Every artist, whether it's a ballet dancer or an opera singer or a stage manager, a stage director, or in any other industry, to feel empowered to speak up when they don't feel safe, when they want to improve the conditions of their work life or their life period. And I think so often they don't feel safe. They feel vulnerable. And I want to do basically everything I can to help make unions and, you know, my union part of the way that we can get there, part of the way of empowering artists as best we can. So I think that's the dream, basically. I want the arts industry to survive, and then I want the artists who work in it to be empowered to improve it.
That's really beautiful. Thank you, Ned. That's, listen, I love leaders who are fighting for a larger cause that will support hearts and brains and livelihoods everywhere. So thank you so much for the work you're doing. It's not easy. And You have such a gift in the way that you hold people and the way you fight for the arts. So I'm sure you don't hear thank you enough. So please hear it from me more. And I really, any way that we can support in amplifying your voice, that's what we want to do here. And thanks for being you.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me on the very appropriately named for what my focus is, the collective corner, the collective action corner. But yeah, no, it's been a pleasure. It's great to talk to you again. And thank you.